Your Netflix subscription is about to get a little more pricey.
Are you allowed?
The streaming giant on Tuesday announced it's raising prices in the U.S. on all three of its plans by $1 to $2 a month, making it the company's biggest price hike since it launched. The extra cash will help Netflix pay for its huge investments in original shows and movies.
The world's biggest car makers and car lovers have flocked to Detroit this week for flashy new sports cars, trucks, and electrified concepts. But auto executives' attention is on Washington, where they say political uncertainty around trade disputes and a government shutdown is costing the industry. President Donald Trump's efforts to revamp trade and environmental policies only compounding concern for the automakers, as forecasters have predicted a slowdown in vehicle demand in the U.S. and China in 2019.
Facing blistering criticism for its role in eroding the news industry, Facebook announced Tuesday it will invest $300 million in helping revive it. Some of the money will go directly to nonprofits, while the rest will go toward funding reporting grants for local newsrooms and a project to help publishers turn readers into paying subscribers.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's January 16th, 2019, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for being with us again today for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you today. We'll take you to the North American International Auto Show. Dale Buss, contributor at Chief Executive Magazine, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, and others will be with us from Michigan this morning to talk a little bit about the auto show. New partnership with Ford and Volkswagen, front and center there. We'll bring in Dale momentarily. A little bit later in the program, yes, people are still inventing things. Every year, some cool stuff gets invented. So we thought we'd take a deep dive on inventions this morning. The business of inventing at about 5:40 this morning. Calvin Flowers will be here. He's the executive director at Chicago Inventors Organization. We'll talk a little bit, too, about the latest Hall of Fame, Inventors Hall of Fame inductees. Again, at about 5:40 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward a flat to negative open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning, with markets with the Dow futures in the positive, up almost 0.25%. S&P futures are up just a fraction, but NASDAQ futures down just a fraction. In Europe, after the big Brexit failure yesterday for the British Prime Minister May, the FTSE lower by 0.5% this morning. In Germany, markets are lower by a fraction. In France, up just about 0.25%. And in Asia, markets are mixed, with the Nikkei off by about 0.5%. The Hang Seng and the Shanghai are higher. Oil is trading at $51.88 a barrel, down about 23 cents. A couple of stories this morning making business headlines. It looks like Sears will be staying in business. Sears Holdings Company Chairman Eddie Lampert has reportedly prevailed in a bankruptcy auction for the department store chain. Sources are telling CNBC that Lampert improved his takeover bid to $5.2 billion to make the deal, allowing the 126-year-old company to keep its door open. The proposal will save about 45,000 jobs at Sears and keep 425 stores open in the U.S. The deal still has to be approved by a U.S. bankruptcy judge. A hearing is expected to be scheduled later this week. Sears has not commented on the report. The man who runs the biggest bank in America says the government shutdown could cut U.S. economic growth to zero if it doesn't end soon. J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon says someone estimated the partial shutdown would reduce growth to zero if it continues through March 31st. Dimon says this week that the shutdown of one-fourth of the federal government is more of a political issue than anything else, so politicians in Washington need to resolve it soon. He stressed the company needs to get help from people who are willing to compromise, and they need to focus on good government policy. He says the shutdown is not going to help the economy. The IRS is recalling thousands of furloughed workers to handle tax refunds. 46,000 IRS employees will be working without pay during the government shutdown. The IRS is planning to dole out refunds throughout the shutdown, but it will not perform other functions like audits. In previous government shutdowns, the White House policy has been to halt refunds for taxpayers until funding was restored. We begin this morning with cars. Lots of vehicles being unveiled so far at the Detroit Auto Show, also known as the North American International Auto Show, and not all of them are SUVs. And there's also a cool new partnership between Ford and Volkswagen. Let's bring in a writer, Dale Buss, who is a contributor at Chief Executive Magazine, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, USA Today as well. Dale, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning from Detroit. Thanks.
Yeah, so the show is off and running. Give us the highlights so far as you see them.
The highlights, I guess, would include the interesting fact that, as your news report initially alluded here, the industry is kind of frozen in a lot of ways. If you talk to the CEOs and other executives there, because of Donald Trump's trade policies, because of the government shutdown, he's playing some games of chicken that have them kind of nervous. While at the same time, in a lot of ways, things couldn't be better in the industry, and that's also reflected at the show. I mean, the industry was supposed to face a downturn a few years ago, all the pundits said, but instead, for four straight years, U.S. auto sales have been around 17 million units a year, which is pretty much at record levels. So there's just a weird mix of optimism and trepidation as you go around the floor during the press preview at the Detroit show. And, of course, kind of a pall over the whole thing is the fact that this is the last Detroit Auto Show during the winter. For 30, 40 years, it's been a tradition for the industry and for consumers in Detroit and for the global press to come to a show which has often been held in frigid temperatures, not inside, but getting there in snow and all that. And because of other changes in the auto industry, how auto shows are regarded by companies as marketing tools, the Detroit show is going to be forced to move to the summer next year. So there's just a lot of talk and uncertainty about that as well. So kind of a strange, unprecedented mix, I guess, in a lot of ways, is what we're finding at the show this year.
And there have been quite a few unveilings of new cars, as there always is. I was struck that not all of them are SUVs, as I mentioned there in the opening. Quite a few cars, which have not really been the fancy in the auto industry lately. What is being unveiled? What are some of the cool cars and vehicles being unveiled?
Well, it's true. There are a lot of unveilings as usual, not as many as usual. The industry has pretty much put its stock in SUVs and pickup trucks because that's what American consumers are buying. At the same time, what has happened with sedans at a time when so many companies are pulling out of a sedan business is an emphasis on performance. Cheap gas makes automakers think, okay, there's still a strong market out there for throaty automobiles. So there's a new, the fastest ever Ford Mustang, the Shelby GT500, was introduced. I think it yields something like 700 horsepower or something like that. So that was a pretty popular choice in terms of introductions at the show. And then there are a whole slew of concept cars, as there always are. And those have tended to be electric concepts that would lend themselves well to the era of autonomous driving that's coming. Infiniti released a concept called the QX Inspiration, which essentially looks like a really fancy rolling living room with really cool design and a very comfortable space inside. So nobody knows quite how we're going to get to the autonomous future, but they're all kind of making guesses about how what we're going to ride when we get there, and that's why there are concept introductions as well.
Yeah,
and again, they're kind of all over the map.
Yeah, and I mean, some exciting in terms of the electric vehicle, and I guess they're calling these EV crossovers. Some cool stuff. Seeing photographs from Infiniti, the new Infiniti, Nissan, Cadillac, all have some pretty cool looking concept cars and some new electric vehicles. Is the electric thing happening as fast as we thought it would, Dale?
Oh, Oh, no, not at all. It's kind of like saying we're going to go into recession. Eventually it's going to happen. The same thing is happening with electric vehicles. Eventually we're all going to be driving electric. Well, it's just not happening as fast as anybody predicted, and there are a number of reasons for that. One is, you look at Tesla, which has been the leader, and they're having their problems putting a mainstream-priced electric vehicle out there. The Model 3 is, I think it's going for an average of around $44,000, and that is not the mainstream price point that Elon Musk promised. Another thing, of course, is cheap gasoline. I mean, I was meeting with some folks from Toyota last night who said, hey, we're sticking with the internal combustion engine. We will have hybrids, but we don't think, unless gasoline goes to $4 a gallon, that there's going to be wholesale adoption of electric vehicles in this country. And really what electric vehicles have become is both a regulatory play. The automakers, have to be putting these cars out there to meet regulators' objections and concerns. And it's also a generational play. Maybe Generation Z, the kids who are around 20 years old or getting into the early 20s now, will be the generation that says, we don't want to drive anything but electric. And they'll do that on the basis of their belief, about climate change and whether electric propulsion is what they should be doing, regardless of gasoline prices or a buck a gallon or something. So it's a slow slog, but from a number of reasons, cultural, political, as well as economic, the automakers all have to be showing progress in electric vehicles and showing off, how they intend to meet the electric future.
Dale, this announcement yesterday by Ford and Volkswagen, the two are going to work together on self-driving vehicles and electric cars. Tell us about it.
Well, of course, the CEOs of the companies, Herbert Diess, VW, and Jim Hackett of Ford, were casting this agreement in glowing terms as a way to kind of deal with needs that they have in a cost-effective way. The reality is that these two companies are in weakened positions, let's say, as they get to this deal. The deal itself is, probably the first of many sort of joint efforts by these companies, but they're starting in the mid-sized truck and small commercial van area in markets outside of the United States. So it's not like we're going to be selling or seeing Ford make a pickup truck for Volkswagen and selling it, down the street at a U.S. dealer. That's not going to happen. Most of these vehicles initially are going to go to markets abroad where they can save money by probably making it different badged vehicles, one VW, one Ford, in the same plant, for example. But in reality, what this reflects is something that the late Sergio Marchionne, the CEO of Fiat Chrysler, who died last summer, had been saying for a long time, which is that the industry is eventually going to get to the point, and was at the point, of overcapacity. And between excess production capacity around the world and the costs, the crushing costs of coming up with a fleet of electric vehicles and also self-driving vehicles, Ford and VW are kind of the first two big automakers to blink and say, we can't afford to do all this. We've got to do more stuff alone. And so while kind of a portent of the future, it's ultimately a sign of the relative weakness of these two companies that they've got to get together to do something like this.
The cost of this technology, I mean, you mentioned that as being one of the drivers here. Some of this stuff is really expensive to get to, and it's surprising that some of the other car companies have been trying it on their own. Give us a sense of what kind of technology we're talking about and why it's so expensive.
Well, the technology, the two technologies that are just driving everything these days are investments in electric vehicles, where it's kind of more in their traditional wheelhouse coming up with electric cars. They just have to come up with a powertrain with a battery that gets enough of a range, so-called range, how far you can travel in it between charges, that consumers will be interested in. So far, they've only been able to get up to 200-some miles in cars like the new Chevrolet Bolt and the Tesla Model 3. So working on that battery technology, developing better batteries and other breakthroughs, figuring out how to make these things efficiently is investments of, tens of billions of dollars across the industry. And then, of course, the other thing is autonomous vehicles, where the automakers have to figure not only you know, how do you make vehicles that are better than conventional vehicles that came before, but how do you fit these vehicles into the overall autonomous driving scheme that's taking place, meaning sensors, radars, not only making sure that the cars can function on their own without a driver, but stick them into traffic, you know, the infrastructure, roads, traffic lights, other cars, pedestrians. That also is taking the industry tens of billions of dollars. So it's just two hugely demanding new areas of investment, and that's why you're seeing, one reason you're seeing partnerships like Ford VW, you're also seeing auto companies share the cost of development with each other. GM and Honda are sharing some self-driving development costs. And, of course, the ultimate play is let's work with Silicon Valley. So you've got Fiat Chrysler working with the Google Automotive Unit, for instance. So there's a lot of cost sharing already going on as they all kind of try to get positioned for this future. It's just really expensive to do it, you know, before you've sold a single vehicle.
And we can stay positive about this partnership, but we can look to history. Some of these auto partnerships often end with ugly breakups, don't they?
Yeah, they do. GM, for example, had a partnership with Fiat several years ago before the Great Recession and before Fiat ended up buying Chrysler. And they ended up having to pay, I think it was a $2 billion penalty to Fiat just to get out of a deal a few years later. So, yeah, these companies all have hugely different cultures, different priorities, different leadership. It's a very messy thing for them to get too close to one another and try to burden or share too much of the burden. But that's why Ford and VW is starting with, you know, a relatively safe, small area and just see if they can get along well enough to actually save money and put out vehicles that will sell.
All right, Dale, good stuff. Thanks for joining us. Of course, the auto show, the public part of the show is January 19th through the 27th, but all of the previews are continuing. Have fun looking at all the good, cool stuff over there.
All right, I will. Thanks again, Steve.
All right, Dale Buss, a contributor at Chief Executive Magazine, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, and regular over here at this place at the opening bell. We appreciate him joining us from the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. Chicago-based Allscripts is working with Microsoft to match patients with clinical trials. Microsoft announced a partnership with Veradigm, the payer and life sciences division of Allscripts, on an electronic health record platform to help bring new therapies to market and cut down on R&D costs. And Chicago e-textbook startup RedShelf has hired its first ever chief revenue officer. RedShelf announced the appointment of Scott Smith to the executive role, where he'll oversee the company's sales, revenue growth, and strategy. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. To learn more, head to chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of the opening bell. Recently at the Consumer Electronics Show, the 2019 class of the National Inventors Hall of Fame was announced. Innovations in ranging from the Unix operating system to fluoride toothpaste, all being celebrated as inventions that make it to the Hall of Fame there. Well, we'd use that as a diving off point to have a larger discussion about the business of inventions, wondering how many inventions happen every year, what kinds of things are being invented. By the way, for 2015, the last year that was available, the number of patents, which sort of gives us an idea of what's being invented, at nearly 600,000 individual patents for all kinds of things. We want to bring in this morning for our conversation on this Calvin Flowers. He's the executive director at Chicago Inventors Organization. Calvin, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for being with us today. We're just absolutely enthralled by some of the inventions that we've been looking at over the last couple of days getting ready for this broadcast today. And maybe that's a good place to start. Give us a sense of the health of the invention sector of our entrepreneurial world. How are inventions going these days? Are we seeing a lot of new stuff coming out?
Well, the state of the invention world is, is amazing. It's exciting, and from my point of view, a little bit scary. And the reason I say that, when you think about the advancement of 3D printing, you know, they're moving into the medical field. They're creating artificial bones. They're thinking about doing human organs, and even talking about food where populations that really can't feed themselves, they're thinking about doing that with 3D printing. So that's just one avenue. Then when you take a look at the evolution of the Internet of Things, it's, you know, that's where physical devices are hooked to the Internet. Now it's going to be going where they're calling it the Internet of Everywhere. And lastly, in 2019, they're looking to increase the speed of data transfer to 5Gs now. So and that's lightning speed. So the state of inventions is very exciting right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and I guess, Calvin, it comes down to if you've got a good idea, you should probably go with it. I think that's probably a good starting point, too, to just, you know, if somebody's sitting out there and they think, you know what, I've got the best idea for something, what do they do with that? How do they proceed with that? I mean, how do they even get started being an inventor?
Well, Steve, I'm an inventor myself, and I was fortunate enough to sell nationwide in Walgreens. And like most inventors, I thought I had a good idea, but I had no clue on how to get started. So typically where inventors get started off is once they come up with the idea, the way I did it, I built a working model to prove to myself that the concept worked. And then from there, I did what they call is a preliminary patent search to make sure that it wasn't out there. And then from there, then I started identifying resources like patent attorneys and manufacturers that could help me prototype it and bring it to fruition.
Yeah, and that seems like a lot of work. Is that part of the reason why you're involved with the Chicago Inventors Organization? Because your organization does some of that, that provides some of those resources, or at least pushes people in the right direction, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, that's how the Chicago Inventors got started. When I took my product nationwide in Walgreens, I got a lot of press, and a lot of people were calling me. And I was thinking that they were calling me for business, but it was a lot of inventors were calling me because they had an idea and that they wanted to know how I did it. So it turned out that it was so many people that were calling me that, you know, I couldn't do them one-on-one. So I put them all in a room at one time and shared my story with them, shared my experience with them, and then the Chicago Inventors Organization got started from there. But the whole premise of the Chicago Inventors Organization is to help inventors navigate the process, because we are a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. And right now we do partner with manufacturers. We have a pro bono patent program that we are affiliated with. And investors and buyers that we are connected with.
Okay, well, I'm interested now. What was your product? What did you get into Walgreens?
Okay, now this is, now keep in mind, this was at the turn of the century. I can't believe I'm saying that, but at turn of the century, 1999, 2000, it was a device that gave parents a tool to supervise their children on the internet. And, supervise the children on the internet, and they didn't have to be computer literate. All they had to do was turn a key. And and the other feature for the device was that it curtailed telephone abuse. And as I said, we sold it nationwide in Walgreens, and just as it was really taking off, it was infringed on by a really gigantic company. I won't say their name on the radio, but we had to go through the litigation process for about 2 or 3 years. And by the time the whole litigation process was over, the technology had passed. And so So, because cell phones were everywhere at that point.
Right, right.
And so, but it was a good story. We made a lot of money out the deal, but they put a gag order on me, so I can't really talk about what the financial settlement was.
Yeah, and I suppose, Calvin, that's like the worst case scenario for inventors, isn't it? Or does that happen too often in the process?
It does happen a lot. What big corporations count on that your pockets are not going to be deep enough to fight them in court. Or even bring it to court. And if you do, they tend to have a contingency fund set aside where they can settle with you out of court. But it does happen a lot if you're fortunate enough to get your product to market. That's why a lot of, as an organization, we encourage our inventors when they're bringing a product to market to try to license it with a bigger company that has distribution channels and deeper pockets that can fight off that sort of thing.
Yeah. Your organization, Chicago Inventors Organization, has monthly meetings. In the last one, just a couple of days ago, it was 7 steps to getting paid for your $1 million invention. What are some of those steps that you can share with us?
Well, some of the steps is first of all, you want to understand the patent process. If I start from the beginning, you want to come up with something that's unique. So you're going to do that preliminary patent search that I mentioned before. But you want to definitely have a patent strategy. You got the different type of patents. You got the provisional patent. You have design patents. You have utility patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets, and that sort of thing. You got to figure out which one of those are the best strategy for you. And then from there, you got to figure out how you're going to you got to put a manufacturer in place where you can actually, I always put it this way. You got to consider whether you want to manufacture this product yourself or you want to license it out. Now, either way you go, you need to engage a manufacturer because you got to understand the cost that's involved, and then develop some type of retail price. And then at the end of the day, you're going to be sitting down at a table. You're going to be negotiating a deal. If you don't know that type of information, you're not going to be a very good negotiator. You're probably going to be leaving something on the table. Those are the main two things that out of the 7 steps that I think are important.
And the other thing, too, that I bet you might say would be important is having conversations and getting together with other like-minded people. And I know your organization has a conference every year, but getting in a room and having these sort of relationships and meeting other entrepreneurs and inventors has to be a positive thing, too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think that's invaluable because, most of the time when you're inventing something, your people that's close to you, especially your family members, probably thinking that you're a nut job and you can't really sit down and talk with them about the different challenges and the failures and successes. You can't talk to them about that. But you get in a room full of like-minded inventors, they have stories that's similar to yours. So you're able to bounce stuff off each other and it's invaluable.
How often does somebody call you and say, hey, Calvin, I've got this $1 million idea. hear me out. do you have that conversation a couple times a day?
Oh, I have that more than a couple of times a day. Everybody thinks that they have the best thing since sliced bread. They feel like their idea is going to be, going to make $1 million easily. So we don't discourage anybody because when you think about it, you think about some of the products that make millions of dollars. Look at the Pet Rock. I would have told somebody, don't even try it. Or even the Snuggie. I would have said, don't try it. But those items make millions and millions of dollars. So you don't discourage anybody. So you hear them out, and then you point them to the resources and see how tenacious are, how much follow-up and, I guess, fortitude that they have to go to the next level.
Well, very good. Calvin, great talking with you. I know there's an entrepreneurial spirit out there alive and well, not just in Chicago, but everywhere else. And your organization, like others, is helping. We appreciate you sharing some of your knowledge this morning and being on with us.
I appreciate you having me. Can I say our telephone number?
Absolutely. Yes.
Anybody that's interested in trying to take their invention to the next level, they can call us at 312-850-4710. That's 312-850-4710.
Absolutely wonderful. And the website is chicago-inventors.org.
That is correct. I appreciate you shouting that out for me, Steve.
All right, very good. We'll come back and see us sometime. Calvin Flowers is the executive director at the Chicago Inventors Organization. Again, chicago-inventors.org.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow and S&P futures in the green, but just barely this morning. NASDAQ futures flat. Heading to the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. In the trade in live cattle futures at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, those contracts moved to life of contract highs. Concerns about severe winter weather that could prompt beef packers to pay higher prices for animals across the Plain States. At the end of the day, the February live cattle contract up $1.60. The January feeder cattle contract was up 12 cents a hundredweight for the day. And April lean hogs ended up 25 cents at $66.95 a hundredweight. One other note on the hog production and the concern over African swine fever. Reports out of China that say the African swine fever epidemic have culled 916,000 pigs as of January 14th in China. But when you have about 250 million or so in the country, that's probably not enough to affect the marketplace. Grain trade yesterday, we saw soybeans trade lower for the third time in four sessions on Friday. As a matter of fact, a totally red screen on the grain market. March wheat down 2¾ cents, March corn down 6¾, and March soybeans down 8¾ cents a bushel. And we end this morning's report on a sad note because many people knew Herb Teichman of Tremendous Fruit Farms over in southwestern Michigan. We received word that Herb Teichman passed away earlier this week at the age of 88. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. A couple more stories that we want to share with you this morning before we leave. A Gillette ad for men invoking the hashtag MeToo movement is sparking intense online backlash with accusations that it talks down to men and groups calling for a boycott. But Gillette says it doesn't mind sparking a discussion. Since it debuted Monday, the internet-only ad has garnered only nearly 19 million views on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, a level of buzz that any brand would covet. The two-minute ad from Procter & Gamble's Razor brand shows men and boys engaging in bullying and sexual harassment and encourages men to say the right thing and act the right way. Taking on bullying, sexual harassment, and toxic masculinity is a big task for the Razor brand. The outcry echoes other attempts by major advertisers like Pepsi and Nike to take on social issues. You remember that Nike did this, but had a much different response initially to their ad. The nation's craft beer taps are being squeezed by the government shutdown, which has put new releases on hold, prevented new breweries from opening, and has stopped shipments of some suds across state lines. The partial shutdown halted operations at the federal agency that regulates alcohol production and distribution. That means government employees can't issue the permits needed for the beer to flow. Brewers are increasingly nervous that they will lose money if brewery openings and seasonal beers are delayed much longer in the dispute over President Trump's demand for a wall along the Mexican border. And now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, January 16th. Import and export prices for December lead off this morning's economic reports. Analysts expect a decline of 1.2% after November's 1.6% retreat. Import and export prices due midday. The January housing market index also out today. Housing industry experts see the index edging up slightly. On the earnings calendar, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and BlackRock earnings, quarterly earnings due today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, January the 16th.